Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back discussing the Torah portions. This week, we're going to be covering the Torah portion called Noach, which is Hebrew for Noah. And as you might imagine, it's all about Noah. The reading this week is from Genesis 6:9 to 11:32. So again, if you want to follow along with us, go ahead and pause the video right now and you can go ahead and read that. We've already read ahead of time, and so we're about to get into discussing.
As the name of this portion suggests, the portion is about Noah, and not only about the flood which he had to face and the ark which he built, but also about what he did after the flood and about his descendants and about how eventually they came to fill the earth and become the multitude of nations which would be seen throughout biblical times, including the people of Israel.
Although it wouldn't actually be Israel, it just gets to Abraham. Israel comes later.
Well, yeah.
So right off the bat, what Scripture says about Noah is that he was the only righteous person in the world at the time. As we covered in the last portion, in the last video, Earth had gotten really corrupt, really violent, because starting with Adam's first sin, it just kept snowballing and it got out of control to the point that God wanted to destroy everything. And so when he looked at everything, he looked for righteousness, and all he found was Noah. And it says in verse 9 that Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Or I think in ESV it says blameless in his generation.
Yeah.
So, but whatever the case, Noah was the only righteous person. It kind of stood out to me, especially the phrase blameless in his time. It just made me think of especially how believers today are just getting fewer and fewer, and society as a whole is getting wickeder and wickeder. And so Noah just kind of stood as an example that believers can look to, as there's not much righteousness, but you can be righteous and you can be that example that God says you're righteous and I will save you from the destruction that comes with sin.
I'm reminded of something that Paul said along similar lines in Philippians. Paul says to the Philippians that he wants that you may become blameless and innocent children of God, unblemished in the middle of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you are shown to be as lights in the world.
Holding out the word of life, right?
Right. So just like Noah, it's our responsibility in the middle of a generation which is wicked and corrupt and perverse to be the only righteous ones, to be blameless and unblemished. And if we do that, then like Noah, we will shine when we are saved from the coming judgment.
I believe that Peter talks about Noah as being a proclaimer of righteousness, right? Noah didn't just stop at being the only righteous person. He also proclaimed that righteousness. Now, no one listened to him, as evidenced by the fact that God went ahead and destroyed everybody. But still, Noah was essentially the first evangelist, for lack of a better word.
I guess you could say that. But yeah, he was a light to his generation, even if no one was looking. Because everyone was too busy looking at evil. How can we be more evil?
Exactly. And it says that man's heart was on wickedness
continually. It says every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually.
And I think that kind of flies in the face, just right there, that flies in the face of the idea that man is basically good, which is very common in secular circles and even in a lot of so-called Christian circles. They're like, well, man is basically good. We're not. We're very much not. Without God, we don't have that goodness in us. It's just evil. And like, yes, there will be interspersed good things throughout that evil, maybe, depending on who you are, but overall, it's a net evil.
Right. One of the features of Noah's righteousness that's made note of several times in this portion is that he did all that God commanded him.
Right.
It repeats that over and over again. That's what was distinctive about what he did. Every time God told him to do something, he did everything that God told him to do.
Right.
No exceptions.
That's ultimately one of the fundamentals of righteousness, is doing what God says.
Another thing that I find interesting is that God spared Noah on account of his righteousness, but he also spared Noah's sons and his sons' wives.
Yeah, it doesn't specifically say they were righteous.
It never says they were righteous. It doesn't say they were unrighteous. Mm. But it says Noah was the only righteous one in the generation.
Yeah.
So could they have been righteous? I mean, I guess Shem and Japheth are later shown to be righteous.
Yeah.
But at any rate...
Ham, not so much.
Yeah. But it's on account of Noah that his sons were saved.
Right.
So... your righteousness or your wickedness can affect others as well.
Right.
It can give them a path to righteousness.
One thing that I wanna explore a little bit is the concept of corporate punishment. Because that's something that a lot of people, they find it unfair to just judge everyone, blanket everybody for something. For anything, really. And what God here did was he looked at all of humanity and he said, except for Noah, I'm judging everybody. Man, woman, child, everybody. And you've got to think that there were infants, there were women. Like, could it have possibly been that every single individual person, including children, were so evil that they deserved to be killed? How can corporate punishment be just?
That is a really good question. At even the animals got punished for this action, except for the animals that were on the ark. Mm-hmm. All the animals died because of man's evil.
Right.
But I think it goes back to what I just said a moment ago. On account of Noah's righteousness, he saved his family. Mm. Because his righteousness affects the fate of others. The evil also has consequences to everyone. The evil was so inescapable and filling the earth that there was no solution. The evil had to go away.
Right.
And it was so rooted in everything that everything had to be wiped out, even the innocent creatures.
Right.
Even children.
Yeah. And there's a balance there, because on one hand, God did corporately punish the entire world. But at the same time, he didn't lump Noah in with that corporate punishment. So, yes, God punishes the wicked, and yes, that affects people that we would deem innocent. But at the same time, God saves the righteous out of that. And we'll see that again with the story of Lot in Sodom. We'll see that same concept arise again, but that's getting a bit ahead of ourselves. But corporate punishment is just when you're corporately evil.
Right.
and it's God's call to decide when something is so corporately saturated with evil that it needs to be completely judged. We have to just... that's God's decision as judge.
Yeah. But what Peter says is that Adonai has known how to rescue godly ones out of ways of testing and to watch over unrighteous ones to a day of judgment being punished.
Right.
So despite the fact that corporate punishment may happen, God will rescue the righteous out of that.
Mm.
And so... that's what you need to know.
Yeah.
Is that if you want to escape the judgment, you need to be righteous.
Mm, right.
And it's not your place to question God about this.
Mm.
What God wants you to do is stand out and be righteous in the middle of a corrupt generation.
And do what he says.
And do all that he commands you. Mm. If you do that, then you will be spared. Another thing I would note is that the judgment that's coming.
Right.
God chose to spare Noah from it.
Mm-hmm.
But he expected some things of Noah to get ready.
Right.
He basically said, I promise I'm going to protect you. Mm-hmm. You just have to take the way of escape.
Right.
So Noah had to get the ark built. He had to stock the ark with provisions, enough provisions for the full year that he would spend on the ark. So if Noah hadn't done that, then the flood would have come and he wouldn't have been ready.
Right.
So God provides a way of escape, but we have to take it. And it doesn't mean just doing nothing and letting God save us.
Right.
We have to follow the path that he's made for us.
Right.
And if we do that, then God will be faithful to deliver us. Mm. But we have to take the way of salvation.
Right. Salvation is kind of a two-way street. Kind of. God does all the heavy lifting, and then he just says, follow me. He's like, he gives the instructions. God does all the planning, really. God planned the ark.
Oh, yeah.
He gave all the instructions. It was very detailed, very detailed.
Everything he needed to know.
So God explains how to do things, and he lays out in his word what he expects of us. And he does the power of, he judges the wicked, and he provides the way of salvation out of that judgment. And then he just says, take that way. And I think that the way of salvation from judgment through the ark is really an excellent picture of Yeshua. It's one of the earliest pictures of Yeshua, where it depicts going through a small way that hardly anyone gets through in order to be saved from judgment because of sin. Yeshua says that the way to salvation is narrow and the road is tight.
Yeshua says, I am the door. If anyone comes in through me, he will be saved.
Right. And so when all of those animals and Noah and his family went in through the door of the ark, it says that God sealed that door. That door was the way to salvation. Once you went through, you were safe. As long as you were inside the ark, you were safe. Everything will die. Everything will perish outside that door. Outside of that one way, which hardly anyone can get through, there's death and destruction and judgment. But through that door is salvation and life and a covenant of peace.
And God made a promise, a covenant, to preserve a remnant of all the creatures of the earth on that ark.
Right.
So, despite the judgment, he made sure that he was going to preserve his good creation.
Yeah.
So, we've already covered pretty well the circumstances surrounding the flood and the building of the ark.
Right.
I just want to take a moment to really appreciate the gravity of the flood itself. That God was really, he had created everything, and in the last portion we saw how broken it got.
Right.
And so God determined that at the cost of countless lives, it had to be rebuilt from scratch.
Yeah.
Up to this point, God had given lots of mercy, and it just got to the point where he couldn't do that anymore. And so justice had to come. And justice is a necessary thing, but it's a painful thing and a costly thing. And so it's always important to realize that sin has that totally destructive consequence. It destroys everything it touches.
Yeah.
And that's why when Noah got off the ark, God instituted a covenant which would change some things to start on a path which would redeem us from that and which would prevent us from falling back into that same destruction which would end everything.
To an extent, he more laid out what we should avoid and how we should respond to it, like specifically with, if man sheds the blood of man, by man will his blood be shed. But at the same time, people shed blood all the time. Well, it didn't physically prevent anything. He just laid out some ground rules, which man then broke again. What God did was he showed mercy in that he promised that no matter how bad things got, he wouldn't flood the earth again.
Right.
He was like, yes, I'm taking this measure this time because things got so bad, but I'm deciding right here and now, I'm staking my name on it. I'm putting a sign in the sky for you to see and for me to see, to say, don't be evil, but if you are evil, I won't flood the earth again.
Right.
I'll show you that mercy.
At the same time, the nature of this covenant with Noah is all about the value of life. The earth had been filled with violence before the flood.
Right.
And God basically said, I'm not going to judge the earth in such a way that everything is killed again because I value life. And I want you to value life too. Anyone who sheds blood by man will his blood be shed. He's establishing this rule that life has value, and if you don't respect that, then you shouldn't live.
Right.
Because you're going to shed blood. You're going to destroy what is life.
Yeah.
And even when it comes to the part of that covenant where God gave the animals for us to eat, he said, but you can't eat blood. Don't eat blood because the life is in the blood.
Right.
Even with the animals, there is a certain respect for the life. And how much more the life of a human.
Right.
Who's in the image of God. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his own image.
Right.
It is because of that, that he's in the image of God, that his life is so precious and valuable. And anything which breaks that is very dangerous.
and I think that part of what this establishes is it establishes the cost of a life. If you take a life, what is owed is a life. It kind of alludes to the coming sacrificial system in that in order to pay for sin, the cost is the life of an animal. In order to pay for murder, the cost is yourself, is your own life. And it establishes that when wrong is done, the cost for that is blood. Blood is the only thing that's able to make restitution for blood. And we'll see later, for other things as well, you also need blood.
Right. Blood covers over every sin.
Right.
But we'll get to that later.
So a few times now we've mentioned that God made a covenant with Noah. And this is the first time that covenant is mentioned in Scripture. And so I think that we should really explore what is a covenant? What is this thing that God made with Noah?
A covenant is kind of like a contract of sorts that God makes with various people throughout the Bible, in this case, Noah. People can also make covenants with each other.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're conditional, sometimes they're unconditional, but basically it's a promise that I'm going to do something. Sometimes it requires something from you as well.
Right.
In this case, the covenant is unconditional. God is promising he's never going to flood the earth again.
Right.
As long as the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease.
Right.
That's a promise. There's no if.
Yeah, no if.
At the same time, part of this covenant is what God expects from Noah and his descendants.
Right.
Namely, that you don't eat blood and you don't kill people. That's that's not a lot of requirements.
No, it's not.
And even so, it's not, there are no conditions for if you fail to do these things.
That's what's really important is one side breaking the covenant does not mean the other side is free from the covenant. unless it's specified, if you break this covenant, then I won't do this. Unless that's specified, then the covenant is binding to both parties, no matter the faithfulness of the other party. And the other thing about covenants is that they are permanent. There's no undoing any covenant in Scripture.
Especially when God says it's an everlasting covenant,
right,
like this one, a brit olam.
Right.
That means that God has made that covenant and it is staying
forever.
No matter what happens.
Exactly.
Because God swore them, and as long as the earth remains, they will remain.
Right. And again, this cannot be stressed enough. Even if human parties break these covenants, God will not. God will always be faithful. It says in Romans 3:3-4 that even if we are faithless, it doesn't make useless God's faithfulness. He will always be faithful, no matter how unfaithful we are. So just looking at this covenant that God made with Noah, it really just sets up the basic template of a covenant that God will then use again and again throughout Scripture. And that, and the template is, first off, God makes the covenant with a righteous person who he loves. We see that with Noah, we see that with Abraham, we see that with Moses, David. We see that over and over again. God picks someone or a group of people, and he decides, I love you, and I'm going to make a covenant with you. Then it says what God will do in that covenant. In this case, what God is doing is he's promising to not flood the earth again. That is something that he will do, and we can't change that.
Right.
But then at the same time, he then sets expectations of us. He says what he requires of us. He says that about not eating blood. He says that about not shedding blood of man.
That's really the only requirements.
Right. And then also that it's permanent and that it continues for all successive generations, as it says in verse 12. Usually a covenant is made with one person and their offspring. And so even if their offspring aren't faithful to that covenant and there are consequences for that faithlessness, even if they're not faithful, that covenant is still there and it's not undone by anything.
And then the final thing is that the covenant comes with a sign.
Right.
In this case, that sign is the rainbow. Hmm. It's something anyone can see that shows that God remembers his covenant.
Right.
Other covenants have different signs, such as the covenant with Abraham comes with the sign of circumcision.
Right.
Which is, and if you're circumcised, that shows to you as a sign that you have been born into this covenant.
Right. And you're supposed to bind the commands of Torah as a sign on your head and on your hands. Like, the discussion of whether or not that's literal is for another time, but that is also given as a sign. God doesn't just promise to you. He also gives you evidence that he's still actively keeping that promise. And you can look at that and say, you need to keep your end of the bargain too.
I think we've covered the covenant pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
There are many covenants, and they all have different features, but this first covenant provides a good basic layout of
right.
what a covenant is.
Yeah, it's probably the simplest covenant, and it doesn't have a lot of facets. It's just, I won't destroy you. Don't murder each other.
Yeah. The one last part of the covenant is to be fruitful and multiply and increase greatly on the earth.
Right.
And that's what the rest of the portion is about. It's about how they did it. The nature of Noah's descendants.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with his three sons.
Right.
But then from them it gets to many nations. But first, it's worth looking at this one story we're told about what happened to Noah and his three sons right after the flood. Noah planted a vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
He was just starting a normal life, working the ground, just like man was made to do. But evidently he got drunk. We don't know how.
Yeah, we don't know if it was on purpose or an accident or what, but he got drunk.
Yeah, at any rate, he was left naked in his tent, a shameful thing for people to see.
As we saw in the previous portion.
Right. And so Ham did see it. Mm-hmm. And his response was to go show his brothers. Evidently, I don't know if he wasn't being considerate or if he took some pleasure from it. But at any rate, he brought shame to his father.
Right. The fact that Shem and Japheth then knew. Ham didn't need to do that.
Right.
He could have just done what Shem and Japheth did. He could have gotten a garment, gone back in backwards, and covered him. But he didn't. Instead, he chose to shame his own father. He didn't try to help matters at all. He didn't try to conceal it, for lack of a better word. There's a proverb, "He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals a matter." So there are certain things where it's like, yes, what Noah did ended up being shameful. But that shame didn't need to be flaunted around for Noah's other sons to see. Ham could have concealed it. And then his father could have blessed Ham, for all we know, because he concealed Noah's shame instead of broadcasting it.
What's one of the Ten Commandments? Honor your father and mother.
Right.
Paul calls it the first command with a promise. Obviously, it hadn't been commanded yet.
Right.
But
it was understood.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing anyone should have known. Mm. Ham was shaming his father. He was disrespecting him. He wasn't honoring him.
Exactly.
And so when Noah realized what had happened, he was naturally upset. But what I find interesting is that he didn't curse Ham. He cursed Canaan, one of Ham's sons.
That's very odd. I thought it had said Ham earlier, but you're right. It does say Canaan.
It repeats it three times that the curse is to Canaan.
And I guess that brings up an interesting question is like, why would the son be cursed for what the father does? And is that just?
At the same time, you've also got Shem and Japheth. Both did the same thing. Mm-hmm. God, Noah blesses them both. Mm-hmm. But he seems to bless Shem more. Mm. And calling Adonai the God of Shem.
Right.
And saying Japheth will dwell in the tents of Shem.
Right.
So there's sort of this, while he's cursing Ham, he's not actually, he's cursing his son.
Right.
And while he's blessing Shem and Japheth, he's blessing Shem more for no apparent reason. It's very peculiar, and it reads almost more like he's...
More like a prophecy than a...
It's not exactly clear whether Noah is, you know, invoking God to affect the future.
Right.
Or whether Noah is saying the way things will be. Because...
Right.
We know that the land of Canaan is the land that was to be possessed by the descendants of Shem, more specifically, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Right, and the Canaanites then, whatever didn't get completely purged and killed during the conquest of the land, the remaining ones became servants and slaves.
Right.
Which is exactly what it says, that blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant.
The curse... All of these curses and blessings are inherently to offspring, just like the covenant with Noah extends to his offspring.
Right.
So there's nothing really unjust about that any more than the blessing is unjust. The curse isn't any more unjust. But the singling out of Canaan, as opposed to all the ancestors, all the descendants of Ham, serves to be prophetic.
Yeah.
It tells about what is about to happen. Mm. What the God of Shem is going to do.
Right. And in a way, it's almost, if this is just plain a curse versus blessing, Noah blessed Shem and Japheth and all their descendants. But he didn't curse all of Ham's descendants.
Right.
That almost shows, like, kind of a mercy, maybe. It wasn't that a third of the world's population is forever cursed. It was just the Canaanites are going to get expelled by the Israelites. That's the extent of the curse. And as we see later in Scripture, the Canaanites did deserve it. It's not like they were cursed even though they were righteous.
On the contrary, righteous Canaanites were preserved, like Rahab.
Mm.
By acting in faith, they were exempted from that curse. So even though it seems like a corporate curse punishing the children for the sins of their fathers, you can get out of that if you don't follow in the ways of your ancestors.
Right.
While Noah was blessing Shem and Japheth, Adonai was the god of Shem.
Yeah.
So clearly Adonai had already chosen Shem.
Right.
So this blessing and this curse, while it is on the one hand a result of what happened, on the other hand, it's a revealing
of God's plan for the future.
Right. So it's a very interesting dichotomy. I mean, it's a very similar thing. I think we were touching on it last portion, to the duality of things we do having an effect and everything already being seen.
Right. Chapter 10 is probably like the boring chapter, for lack of a better word. It just explains the list of their descendants and it just keeps going. If you're familiar with biblical history going on beyond here, and also you know some of the Hebrew versus English, you'll see a decent number of nations that we end up seeing later. And you see that they were individual people. Starting with the sons of Japheth, you have Javan. That's Hebrew for Greece. Magog is mentioned later as in Gog and Magog. Ashkenaz, that term is familiar for Ashkenazi Jews. It just refers to an area in Eastern Europe.
Mitzrayim, which in English is Egypt.
Right.
Is the son of Ham, as is Canaan.
Yeah.
Which we've already said, but so is Cush.
Which is Ethiopia, right?
Right.
Yeah. You see a lot of familiar nations and you see where they come from.
I think the main thing here to realize is that this is basically showing how all the nations came to be.
Right.
All the goyim, that's the word here. They all came from Noah.
Right.
So while there's division, we all come from the same spot.
Right.
As for how the division came to be, that's actually covered in the next chapter.
Right.
It tells it a little bit out of order, but that we started as one. And there's a sense in which, despite our division, we very much should not lose sight of that.
Right.
Because we're all in the image of God.
Exactly. It basically, it indicates the origin of the races, so to speak. Even though race isn't really a biblical, or it's not really a good term, but in terms of racist, where you're against someone because of their lineage, what this indicates is that all the different races just come from Noah.
Right.
And they all connect. We're all one family, really. And so whether you're Jew or Gentile, whether you're Canaanite or Egyptian, whether you're any of these things, you're all made in the image of God.
At the same time, the divisions were put in place by God, and that for a good reason, because God had instructed us to be fruitful and multiply, but what the descendants of Noah did next was not in line with that command.
Right.
They chose instead.
We'll just stick right here.
Yeah. They were like, this looks like a good place for us all to stick together. We don't want to be dispersed. Mm. We want to make a strong city and a tower, and we want to be mighty. Right.
As opposed to God made this whole earth for us and told us to fill it, it's we want to be together and go all the way up to heaven. In a way, it's similar to how the serpent tempted Eve in the last portion, where he said, if you eat from the tree, you'll be like God. Right. Your eyes will be open. They're like, we want to go up to heaven.
Yeah. Already, they're resisting God again.
Right.
God says, this is only the beginning of what they will do.
Yeah.
Because he has seen it before. He knows what man does.
Right.
When they all unite, they unite to evil.
It's pretty awful, the state of the human condition.
Yeah.
And I guess we kind of see that in that as society today is getting more reintegrated, that language barrier is a lot less than it was here.
Right.
And the economic ties between nations and all the different barriers between nations that God set up we're slowly overcoming those.
Yeah. But we see the reason why God put them in place. It was basically to prevent what happened already, where he had to start over.
Mm.
He put these nations in place to create a division so that the whole earth wouldn't join together in violence
right.
and evil. And so, while we've already said we're all one family and we should very much respect that, at the same time, God created each of us to be unique, to have our own language and ethnicity.
Right.
And he did that for a very good reason.
Yeah.
And if we reject that, if we actively try to forget about that,
yeah,
then we're becoming like these people.
Mm.
And we're hastening our own destruction, more or less. So it is a thing to be balanced about.
Mm.
And to understand God made us as one people, but he also made us as many peoples.
Yeah.
We should be confident in the culture that God has given to us.
Mm.
But at the same time, we need to stick with the one God who made everyone.
Right. The backdrop of God confusing the languages and dispersing the peoples and separating different peoples, that is the backdrop for God's call of Abraham.
Oh, yeah.
God called Abraham as these different nations were forming. There was a very specific time in history after the destruction of Babel where all these different nations, all the different descendants of each group were forming into specific nations. And it's at that time that God chose Abraham and said, I'm choosing you to be the man from whom I make the nation for myself that will reconcile all the nations. So right. basically, God divided everybody. But then he was like, as I'm dividing, I'll pick one group to bring them all back together.
Right.
And to bring them all back, not for evil, but to be brought back to God. But we'll get into that more in detail in the next portion.
But I mean, it says in Colossians that in Messiah, there is not Greek and Jew, circumcision and uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, slave, freeman, but the all and in all Messiah.
Mm.
So in Yeshua, we can be one.
Right.
Despite the division that was made, those divisions fade into the background and
exactly.
don't matter at all when you're in Messiah.
Yeah.
When we try to rely on our own greatness and follow in the spirit of Babel, we'll be divided. But when we follow Messiah and that way to God, then there is unity. So from all these nations, God would eventually pick the one, Abraham, we're kind of brought right up to the cusp of that in this portion.
Yeah.
Enough to see that Abram and his father, Terah, weren't anyone special.
No.
We've already seen the table of all the nations. Mm. These people are just...
people.
Like those.
Yeah.
They wander. They're migrating to fill the earth. So they're fulfilling that command. But yeah, there's nothing here to say that there's a specific reason why God called Abram. Mm. In the next portion, we'll see that Abram's response to God's call illustrates how he was the perfect choice.
Right.
But at the same time...
he hadn't done anything particularly amazing that made him stand out.
Yeah.
He was just a man of character.
He didn't earn this special calling. Mm. God divided all the nations. He had already planned to bless Shem and curse Canaan, as we've seen. Mm-hmm. So it was his plan to pick this insignificant guy.
Right.
And say, from you, I'm going to make a great nation. Mm. Bless all the families of the earth.
Right.
And so we'll see Abraham's story next time.
Right.
From this portion, I'd say the big takeaway is sin has judgment, but God is giving a way of escape.
Right.
And there is only one way of escape. Here we see it's in Noah. Mm-hmm. And then through all the nations, he picks that one special thread. Mm. And we'll just have to see where that thread leads.
Thanks for watching this video with us. Next week, we'll be discussing the portion Lech Lecha. And so be sure to tune in next week. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. And if you would, please consider leaving a donation. These videos are not free to make, and so if you'd like them to stay free to watch, please consider leaving us a donation. We would really appreciate it. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.